Welcome, committee members, to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. Today we have a legislative auditor's report, and the legislative auditor has joined us today. We do not yet have a quorum, but we will go ahead and start the meeting, and then at a break we will officially bring the meeting to order. Mr. Nobles has joined us, and Mr. Nobles, why don't you kick things off with your report? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and with me at the table is Valerie Bombach, who is the manager of our evaluation that we're going to be presenting to you today. Mr. Chairman and members, before we get into the report, I thought I'd recount to you just a little bit of history, which I think is important to recall for understanding why this report is in front of you. And I think this history is probably familiar to many of you. But first, I would start with the fact that in 2008, the Office of the Legislative Auditor issued an evaluation report that said the Minnesota Department of Human Services should give greater scrutiny to the administrative expenses of managed care organizations. We also recommended that the legislature require the Departments of Health and Commerce to develop procedures for more detailed reviews of the reasonableness of MCO's health plan expenses. Then in 2011 and 2012, a major controversy erupted about the finances and accounting practices of MCOs. It was triggered in part by allegations made by David Feinwalks, who just came in the room, the former general counsel of the Minnesota Hospital Association. Then even more controversy erupted when UCARE donated $300 million to the state of $30 million to the state of Minnesota to help the state solve its budget problems. Now, that act of what I guess UCARE considered generosity actually kind of backfired, because for many people that simply confirmed that the state was overpaying MCOs. And then there was a call for the other MCOs to also give money back to the state. This Minnesota controversy then, as we might say, went viral. And the person who just now came into the room, the Commissioner of Human Services, was called to Washington to be grilled before both House and Senate committees. And Minnesota really became on the front page of many media outlets with serious allegations about our MA program and the way we were paying managed care organizations. And then, if that weren't enough, there were a number of federal auditors and investigators that descended on St. Paul to investigate. And to the best of my knowledge, they're still investigating. We haven't gotten their report back yet. Now, the Office of Legislative Auditor, as I mentioned, has been involved in some of these issues over the years. We issued that report I mentioned in 2008. But we also picked up on some of the controversy about managed care organizations again when in 2013, the Legislative Audit Commission directed OLA to use our evaluation resources to look at administrative expenses of MCOs again. And also, we were mandated in the 2012 legislature to hire an outside CPA firm to audit the managed care organizations as well. So we decided to combine those two legislative directives to do our own work that focused on the administrative expenses and to hire the CPA firm that we were required to do. We did issue an RFP for audit services in July 2013. We signed a contract with the CPA firm on October the 16th in 2013. Unfortunately, on December the 18th, 2013, we terminated that contract because we discovered that one of the principals assigned by the firm to conduct the audit had a conflict of interest or independence impairment that he had not disclosed to us. And given the importance of having a firm do the work that was not only competent but independent, And that not only is a requirement of generally accepted accounting principles, but it is also was a requirement clearly stated in the law. And it was a requirement that we went over diligently with every firm we talked to and stressed to them that they had to disclose to us any potential independence impairment. This one was not. We had no other alternative but to terminate the contract with the firm. But given the importance of this issue to the legislature, to the public, and others, we felt like it was our responsibility to carry on with the assignment. Again, we had the responsibility under the directive we received from the Legislative Audit Commission to look at administrative expenses of MCOs, and so that's what we did. I know that there are people out there who are critical of how we approach this, that we did not continue on with a CPA firm, but that was our decision. It was our decision to use three financial auditors, very qualified, very competent within the Office of the Legislative Auditor, to do the work rather than have the firm do it. We think that they were just as skilled, just as diligent, if not more so, in being able to dig into the details of the accounting records of the managed care organizations, and the result is the report you have in front of you, Mr. Chairman. So I'd like to now turn to Ms. Bombach to make the presentation to you.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Ms. Bombach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I am Valerie Bombach, the project manager for this audit and evaluation. Tyler Billig, Valentina Stone, and Carmen Mark Patton, financial auditors from our office, also worked on this report, and they are sitting behind me. Before I get started, I would like to bring one issue to your attention, and that is this audit and evaluation involved working with data that the managed care organizations have identified as not public under Chapter 13. Some work product by the Department of Human Services actuary also was flagged as proprietary. So the report and our presentation today is framed to comply with data practices requirements. Under these circumstances, state law restricts how much information and analysis we can provide or discuss today regarding our financial audit work or about managed care payment rate setting. First, our work involved auditing the financial reporting by the four largest managed care organizations that the Department of Human Services contracts with for the state's public programs. That is Blue Plus, Health Partners, Medica, and UCare. We used a more targeted approach than what would be used for, say, a financial examination conducted by the Department of Commerce. We tested administrative expense data on three key financial reports that the Department of Human Services looks at when determining managed care payment rates. Our scope of work included all administrative expense transactions in which at least some portion was allocated to the state's public programs. We did not test commercial-only or medical expenses or Medicare-only expenses. Our objectives for this work included testing the consistency, the accuracy, and completeness of reporting, as well as the managed care organization's allocation of costs across all lines of business, that is, both commercial and public. So to clarify, we tested any transaction for it. At least one portion of the expense was allocated to a state public program. For this, we pulled a sample of transactions from each managed care organization's detailed administrative data for 2012 and tested the data against our objectives. For some types of expenses, we also looked at the extent to which they were separately reported to DHS for rate setting purposes. And we also reviewed the Department of Human Services rate setting methods as they pertain to administrative expenses only, as well as the department's review of the managed care data. For some context for our discussion, for contract year 2012, total administrative spending for the state's public programs by these four entities was about $278 million. That includes taxes and assessments. That is, the expenses are for all state public programs, the prepaid medical assistance program, Minnesota Care, Minnesota Senior Health Options, Minnesota Senior Care Plus, and special needs basic care. This amount represents spending for about 6.6 million member months. When comparing trends and managed care administrative spending, total administrative costs per member month in 2013 were comparable to rates in 2009 for PMAP and Minnesota Care, and increased by about 8% for MSHL and MSC Plus. I'll start with an overview of several broad conclusions from our audits of these four entities. I'll then expand on our findings in the following slides. The actual audit reports and the managed care organization's responses are located in appendices A through D at the end of the report. First, for the samples we tested, we found that the entities generally complied with accounting principles when classifying and categorizing administrative expenses, with some exceptions. We also found that each of the entities could have allocated some expenses more directly to specific lines of business, and this is a requirement in state law. For some of each entity's subcontracts for administrative services, we found inadequate supporting documentation, and we also questioned some costs allocated to the medical assistance programs. And these costs were not otherwise disclosed to DHS for rate setting purposes. First, we tested how the managed care organizations classified and categorized administrative expenses on their annual financial statement. And that is on one specific document. It's referred to as the Underwriting and Investment Exhibit Part 3. It summarizes all of their administrative expenses into columns and lines, that is classes and categories. For the state's public programs, correct categorization is important because the state's actuary and DHS handle certain types of expenses differently, either for rate-setting purposes or for contract negotiations.
Excuse me, Ms. Bombach?
Yes?
There is a question. I hope you don't mind if we interrupt you as questions come up if we have short ones.
Okay.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Yeah, just on, I thought rather than until we get to the end of the slides, but on that background part, and I stepped out for just a minute. I apologize for that. But administrative expenses, $278 million, that is just total administrative expenses and taxes. But my understanding is it's not what actually was paid to the providers, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Do you know what percentage that is of the total amount of money paid? Is it 8%, 12%, or...?
The total reimbursement for 2000, Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sorry, the total amount of reimbursement for that year, I don't have that number off the top of my head relative to that. So I do know that the settle up occurs quite a bit later after the year is finished. That includes withhold payments, some reconciliation of things like incentives and so forth. So I don't have that number for you. I can get that for you.
One more quick question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and then my understanding is Blue Plus Health Partners, Medica, and UCare are nonprofits, but they're paying taxes in some capacity. Is that what you're indicating here?
Ms. Bombach.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. These dollars include the state premium taxes and the assessments, reported assessments that are required for participating in the public program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And we do now have a quorum, so I would like to officially call the meeting to order. Representative Grunhagen moves approval of the minutes for March 5th. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes? Seeing no additions or corrections or changes, all those in favor of adoption of the March 5th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The minutes are approved. Ms. Bombach, please continue with your presentation.
So for the samples we tested, we found that the entities generally complied with accounting principles when classifying and categorizing expenses with, I'm sorry, I think I am probably further ahead than that. Okay. Going back to the classification and categorization of administrative expenses on their annual financial statement, we tested, were administrative expenses correctly classified, meaning were they correctly classified as administrative and they were not put into the medical expense bucket? We also tested, were administrative expenses correctly categorized? That is, were salaries reported as salary expenses, were taxes reported as taxes, were travel expenses reported as travel, and so forth. And for the samples that we tested, we found the following exceptions among the managed care organizations' reports of overall administrative expenses. And that is, these are the expenses before they were allocated across lines of business, meaning allocated to their commercial product or allocated to a public program. We found that a small number of transactions were miscategorized to incorrect expense lines, that is, to the wrong line, such as salary or as taxes. And these total related costs for each managed care organization ranged from about $1,700 to $3 million. I'll note here that the discrepancies did not affect the overall reported costs on this particular document. We also found one exception where we observed an estimated $2.8 million were misclassified as medical. These are items that were placed, again, in the medical bucket, and in our view, they should have been put and recorded as administrative expenses. Some of the transactions we tested were related to subcontracts for administrative services. That is, the managed care organizations can contract with consultants and vendors to provide a variety of services. Among the samples we tested, we found a lack of documentation for these types of transactions. Specifically, some of the subcontracts were not fully signed. Some had expired. There was no contract, or payments did not align with the contract rates. And for these cost items, we found 2 to 4 exceptions for each of the managed care organizations. We were also asked to look at how consistent the managed care organizations are in their reporting. We found some key differences in how these entities defined various terms. These terms are cited in law, and we think a lack of definitions could have contributed to some differences in reporting. Specifically, some of the phrases are, for example, directly allocate. That means that expenses are attributed to a particular product or more than one product that would have benefited from the service. Other terms include, you'll see in law, are byproduct or program. And we found that there were differences in how they had defined that. That is a program all medical assistance programs and Minnesota Care, or is a program the PMAP program and MSHO and MSC Plus? We also found differences in how they had interpreted charitable contribution. Among the samples we tested, we found that some expenses could have been more directly allocated. That is, state statutes require that the managed care organizations directly allocate expenses to specific lines of business or products when such information is available. And we found examples where they could have more directly allocated to either commercial or a specific public program on their reports filed during 2013. These types of expenses were contract related. They were not general overhead types of expenses. And we found 2 to 5 exceptions for each of the managed care organizations. The managed care organizations have complex allocation models, and we found that they did not restrict some unreasonable or inappropriate expenses from being allocated to the public programs. These types of expenses did not meet a prudent person standard, were unrelated to approved medical assistance services, or were for services or activities outside of Minnesota and unrelated to the products within the state. The types of expenses that we questioned included, again, those types of transactions for services and activities outside of the state of Minnesota and unrelated to a Minnesota product. the Department of Health rules require that these types of expenses be essentially reported in a separate bucket, and we found that the managed care organizations had not done that. The other types of expenses we questioned were alcohol, travel, and entertainment. And in our view, these are items that did not meet a prudent person standard. We found among our samples 1 to 3 exceptions per managed care organization, and that is out of approximately 100 samples that we tested at each entity. I'd like to emphasize that the managed care organizations can incur such costs, but they should be disclosed to DHS for rate setting purposes. And we found that they did not otherwise disclose this information to DHS during 2013, when DHS requested data from the managed care organizations and began developing payment rates for 2014. And this leads to our findings regarding the Department of Human Services. During 2013, as part of the Department of Human Services rate-setting activities, we found that their directives and requests to the managed care organizations regarding their administrative expenses were really too general to address data complexity, data integrity, and variation among the managed care organizations' allocation and accounting practices and processes. And we think the lack of specificity likely impacted the consistency and completeness of the data that they collected. We did find that the Department of Human Services modified its rate setting for some programs to target savings in administrative expenses for the public programs. And they did this in two ways. First, through the competitive price bid process. This is a process that was first implemented in 2012 for the Seven County metro area, and then again in 2014 for 27 other counties. From our review of the actuary documents, we see that competitive price bidding had a multi-year impact on rate setting for the administrative portion of the capitation payment rates. Again, we just looked at the methodology regarding how that portion of the overall payment rate is determined. We also observed a change in their rate setting methodology for computing the administrative portion, and that is to target savings that were specified in law. That is a $47 million reduction in forecasted trend, and we do see that they did take that into consideration for the 2014 contracts. However, we also note that the department did not execute some statutory options to limit administrative costs. In particular, there are some restrictions on annual growth in MCO administrative spending. There are some provisions regarding handling investment income. And then there is the option for excluding non-state plan administrative expenses. And we found that DHS did not execute those options for a number of reasons. We have several overall conclusions from our audit and evaluation work. In particular, we think that more detailed statutory definitions and requirements, as well as more detailed DHS contract language and instructions, first, it would diminish controversy over allowable expenses for setting rates for public programs. This would enhance financial audit work moving forward. These actions should improve consistency and compliance in the managed care organization's financial reporting. It should help assure that unreasonable administrative expenses are excluded when developing managed care payment rates. And lastly, we think restrictions on allowable medical assistance expenses will require independent data verification by the department. We have several recommendations for managed care organizations, the legislature, and the Department of Human Services, and I'll start with the recommendations to the department. We recommend that DHS should enhance their reporting instructions, their definitions, and their technical guidance to the managed care organizations. The department also should enhance their managed care contract language, specifically regarding the managed care organization's subcontracts for administrative services, as well as the reporting requirements and templates for certifying data. Lastly, we think the department should implement ad hoc audits of administrative data, in particular, reconciling unallowable expenses that are specified in state law, as well as other data reported to the department under Minnesota Statute 256B69, that's subdivision 9C, and that is the new financial reporting requirements that were passed in the last couple of years. We also have recommendations to the managed care organizations, and that is for administrative services that are expensed to Minnesota's public programs, the managed care organization should fully report their expenses and investment income in accordance with accounting principles and state law. They should directly allocate costs to specific products when such information is available. They should retain adequate documentation to support subcontracts for administrative services. And they should fully identify and report to DHS the unreasonable and unallowable costs for rate-setting purposes. Lastly, we have some recommendations to the legislature, and that is we recommend the legislature amend Minnesota statutes to expand language regarding how managed care organizations must allocate administrative expenses and investment income. In particular, any amendments should further define what is meant by program or by product. We think the law should be amended to further define types of unallowable expenses for Department of Human Services medical assistance rate-setting purposes. And for this, we think that more definition regarding what is a charitable contribution, as well as some statutory interpretation of allowable compensation salaries, that is, there is a cap in law regarding the amount of compensation over $200,000 that can be included for rate-setting purposes, and I believe that the controversy exists is that it seems that the department is interpreting that more strictly than is specified in law. So some direction from policymakers would probably help that controversy. We think law should be refined regarding the managed care administrative spending limits for public programs. We think the law should be clarified whether this limit is in aggregate or is it by program. The department has voiced a number of concerns about this specific cap on spending and limit, and I think I'll let them speak to it, but as it's currently written, there are some concerns as to whether it's technically compatible with some other provisions in law, as well as some current newly implemented rate-setting methodology. I think the law should be amended to specify the managed care organization's data certification requirements. That is, to clarify language to meet federal requirements. And we found some differences in the Department of Human Services reporting templates as well as the managed care organization certification documents. Lastly, we think more definition in law regarding the terms for the managed care organization subcontracts for their administrative services that are expensed to public programs. That is, we think more explicit language regarding what we think is an appropriate form and content and under what circumstances there should be a formal contract. That concludes my presentation, Mr. Chair, and I would be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bombach. We do appreciate all your hard work and the work of the legislative auditor and all your staff on this. Realize how much work goes into that. We do also just want to let folks at home know that that if you see members kind of looking through this, we're just getting this information at the same time as the public, but we are just starting to work through the report ourselves. We do have Commissioner Justin from the Minnesota Department of Human Services is here and would like to make a comment. What I would like to do is bring Ms. Justin down at this time if she's available, and then if you would be amenable to member questions after Ms. Justin. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Justin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Lucinda Justin, Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And with me, in case there are more detailed questions, is Assistant Commissioner Nathan Morocco as well. Mr. Chair, members, first of all, I'd like to thank the Office of Legislative Auditor for the thoroughness of their report and the depth of their work, which is certainly not a surprise to us given their track record, but we very much appreciate and agree with their findings and recommendations. Let me just say that, to start out by saying that at DHS, much of the last 4 years, we have really focused, with kind of a laser focus on trying to get a better value for our managed care contracts. This is the first time we placed all of our major contracts out for bid, had substantial savings as a result of that. We put caps, we negotiated voluntary caps first, and then worked with the legislature on a bipartisan basis to actually have ongoing caps on increases in these contracts. We worked with the legislature as well to include the $47 million in administrative expenses savings that the OLA referred to earlier. And I appreciate the fact that this, I think the report does, if, when you have a chance to read it, recognize that we have made progress in containing costs and improving the oversight and transparency in our managed care contracting practices. We've made a lot of changes to our rate setting practices as well as the competitive bidding components that we've introduced. And we've worked with the legislature to pass some meaningful reforms on quality assurance and requirements to provide much more detailed information now, much more detailed financial information to DHS, who we're starting to be able to use to have to improve our practices further. But I think the report also reflected some areas where we can make further improvements, and we are very determined to do that. For an example, let me just say a couple of words about the three major findings that the OLA just highlighted, which when it comes to the department, and then we're happy to answer any questions. First, the finding that in 2013 our directives to the MCOs were too general in regard to administrative expenses to sufficiently address a lot of the complexity of this whole area. And I think that this is a new world we are entering into. We did our best, but we also realized that we could have improved. And in 2014, we started having the MCOs report through a new financial template that came directly. So we weren't just relying on information through MDH. It came directly to us. And it captured a lot of unallowable expenses that were mandated in law. And then we updated that in January of this year, an improved financial reporting template. So we'll get more information and gave additional guidance and instructions. And we also included a lot of that in our 2016 procurement. So as many of you all know, in January of this year, we put all of our major contracts out for competitive bid, both in Minnesota Care and in our MA program. And so we included a lot of those new requirements around in those contracts as well, trying to kind of look at those definitions, what's a product, what's a program, and kind of have a lot more clarity. But I think that the OLA's report lets us know that we need to continue to refine our financial reporting template. They've given us some good suggestions on how we should do that, to try and get more administrative expense information at even more granular level. And so we plan on doing that. So we will be providing even further instructions and definition for reporting expenses that are unallowable expenses, such as non-state plan services, that we have kind of gleaned as a result of this audit. So it's two additional recommendations that were made that were directed towards DHS. And one is that we should further specify requirements regarding subcontracts for administrative expenses. And this is one where in our contract with the MCOs, it does require that all subcontract agreements should be in writing and should include a specific description of the payment arrangement. So that's already in our contract, but we will, after this audit, take further steps to include even additional contract language, which further defines the requirements for those subcontract agreements. because we were troubled to learn, too, that there were some subcontractor agreements that didn't have that detail. Some of them weren't signed. I mean, that's we do not want that to be happening. And certainly we'll support the legislative efforts that would define MCL requirements for subcontracts that the OLA is recommending. And finally, the third major recommendation for the department was that we should implement ad hoc audits of data reported by the managed care organization. And certainly we knew the OLA was doing this. We didn't want to get out in front of them, but we think this is a good recommendation. And, you know, while it will take additional kind of staff and resources, you know, we've already started having conversations about how we would do that. You know, having we're developing a process between our internal auditors, who we think would be well-positioned to do this work, but making sure that they also work with our health care administration staff so that to identify what those audit requirements should be. And what we find from the as a result of those audits, we ought to be then changing our contracts, you know, incorporating those findings into our rate setting analysis and our financial reporting. So we also certainly support the OLA's recommendation in that regard as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, we're happy to answer questions as you think appropriate.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. If we could have the OLA staff come up as well, we do have some members' questions, so I would anticipate with great detail that they might have some questions for the staff. So with that in mind, our first question will be from the Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps this is to Ms. Bombeck. The first question is, I didn't understand sort of the big picture as you went into these health plans, which, you know, by law are nonprofit for purposes of this product, but many of them have some of them, I understand, have for-profit subsidiaries that might do administration, third-party administration of other self-insured products and those sorts of things. And did you look at whether or not the division of resources and expenditures, particularly administrative costs, between those for-profit subsidiaries and the nonprofit made sense? Was that in the scope of your work?
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Bombeck.
We actually did look at, if you're referring to how some costs are allocated across lines of business, we did take a look at that, and we do have some observations regarding whether or not some expenses were reasonably allocated or whether they were appropriately directly allocated. That is, whether or not there were opportunities, as required under law, to more directly allocate an expense to the product or program that benefited from the service. And so we do have a section regarding how they have it speak to their allocation practices. And that is the section where we have we have findings within each of the audit reports, and then starting on page 22, we talk a little bit about how they go about doing their allocation methods. So we do have findings that there's opportunities where they could more directly allocate expenses either to a commercial product or to a specific public program.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're all just trying to absorb an over 100-page report and in a quick summary, and I think you did a good job of trying to hit the highlights, but we're still trying to understand some of the details. Then my other question was, and it sounds like the department is trying to move, or is moving in this direction, but at the bottom of page 21 and continuing on to page 22, you said that almost all of the managed care organizations were consistent in that they treated all state public programs as a single product and rarely tracked and directly assigned products solely to one individual program, such as PMAP, MSHO, SMBC, MSC+. We have an alphabet soup of different programs that serve people with very different life experiences, and we contract those out, bid those out separately. And has that been corrected now? Because it seems to me it's really important to keep every single one of those programs separately financially tracked, since we are bidding them and we're setting rates, you know, or administering rates separately for each of those.
Ms. Bombeck.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would like to point something out under this provision of law, and I'm going to go way back to 2008 when this initiative was first started, where the legislature had passed some language in law directing, it would be now the Administrative Expense Task Force, to do some work and look at developing a template for how the managed care organizations should be allocating their costs. And when that law was first passed, the language did specify for each individual state public program. However, during 2010, that language was it was modified somewhat, and it left it a bit more ambiguous, where it says individual product or program. Again, going back to the point that we make in the report, the managed care organizations do most often they may consider all public programs as one product, or perhaps all medical assistance programs as a product. And we think that for rate-setting purposes, because the department does you employ different methods for each of the different programs and contracts, that it could make a difference with respect to how they do their work.
Mr. Chair, maybe the department could respond because they indicated they've made some changes, and maybe they could address whether we're now getting more specific feedback on each of the different product lines.
Commissioner Jessen or Mr. Morocco, whomever would like to handle that one.
If I may, Mr. Chair, let me just give the general comment, and then for some specific examples, I'll ask our Medicaid Director Marie Zimmerman to give you a couple of the specifics. But overall, as I said earlier, we really are trying to standardize kind of the definition of product versus program. For example, with the 2014 legislative changes that placed a cap on compensation above $200,000, so we need to figure out, well, does that mean kind of across all, or can they just, is that, you know, per product? And that's the sort of definition that when we put out our instructions for our competitive bids most recently, just in January, we've clarified that to be really clear. That's one example, but I bet Marie, if I could, Mr. Chair, let Marie give you a couple of other ways we've been doing that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, of course, Ms. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Marie Zimmerman, I'm the Medicaid Director at the Department of Human Services. Maybe just to clarify really quickly Representative Loeffler's question, I think, so for the Department of Human Services, PMAP, Minnesota Care, SMBC, the alphabet soup, we have those administrative expenses reported separately by each one of those products. I think what the OLA is getting at, and certainly Ms. Bamba can correct me, is for the allocation methodology across all of their products, they consider public programs together as a single product as opposed to each one of those individually. So although they report them to us separately and we have different rate setting methodology for each one of those, the allocation methodology for public programs and their commercial line of business is potentially different for each MCO and not treated exactly the same.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair, and Ms. Zimmerman. And is that, are you proposing to keep that the same going forward, or are you thinking that you should ask them to, their allocation between commercial public programs should be more sophisticated as well?
Ms. Zimmerman, or Ms. Bombach, or Ms. Commissioner Jessen? I won't call on you, Jim.
I think what we are recommending is, one, there is the requirement in law that occur, and then we are asking the legislature to further define what is meant by product. And as it is, there is some ambiguity in the law regarding how those expenses should be reported.
Yep. Very good, Representative Loeffler. Next, we have Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It's the L tag team here.
It is a good team.
Yes. So thank you very much. You know, as the chair pointed out, I had sort of a very, very secondhand brief kind of forward look at what was going to be in here, but I haven't seen the report until now. And as you've all been talking, I've been trying to look at it here, and I think we need to sort of first start out by letting the public know, just taking the numbers out of your report, just how much money we're talking about here. I think it's really important. You know, the report is about a lot of minutiae, what can be seen as minutiae, but this is huge stuff in terms of financial impact. So just taking right out of the report, in 2012, taxpayers spent $3.02 billion That's how much money went to the MCOs for all of our public programs. I just pulled that right out of the report. $3.02 billion, and that's just 1 year. So the biennial number that as we budget, for when we talk about our budget, it's usually about double. So we're talking about over $6 billion over 2 years. And then on page 8 of the report, there's a nice handy little table here that talks about the percentage of the payments that are administrative expenses. And the overall, just looking at the four big ones here, the four largest HMOs, the overall total is 5.6%, and that's not including the taxes and surcharges, which I don't think it would be fair to talk about that. But so 5.6% of $3.02 billion in a year, and I can't do that math fast enough, but I could say that it's a heck of a lot of money, right? It's a ton of taxpayer dollars that are going purely for administrative expenses. So, you know, we can sit here all day and talk about, you know, the minutia of this, which we absolutely have to do. But I just, first of all, want to kind of make the point that we are paying multiple entities to deliver these services, often in competition with each other for our patients. And last night I was at an event, I happened to talk to a woman who told me she got, you know, three packages of enrollment materials from UCare, and each one cost $7 to mail to her. That was the postage on it. We are paying for all of that. And, it, you know, we've had these hearings. We've had audit after audit. We've had discussion after discussion. And we don't, you know, we try to tighten it up. And I know Commissioner Jessen's done a lot to really try to get after this stuff. And her staff have really worked on this, and it's certainly better than it used to be. But holy cow, I mean, we are spending, I'd like if somebody can sit here, Mr. Berg, you're our financial guy and you've got the calculator, maybe you can tell me how much that is. 5.6% of, let's double it, $6.04 billion in a biennium. How much money is that? And so, as you've audited this, I just can't help but think how much of this is duplicated. Not duplicated by anybody's intention, but we're paying different entities to do administration of all the same group of people. And that strikes me as absolutely crazy. You know, I know members on both sides talk about this. Representative Grunhagen, you are very rightfully concerned about how much we're spending on Medicaid. A lot of it is not going to health care. I think that's got to be the big message of today. Too much of our public money is going into administration. We're paying the HMOs to deliver care, and we are, a lot of it is simply duplicative. So, I mean, that's got to be the first thing. The other thing that I draw from this, Mr. Chair, thanks for indulging me.
No, I like what you're saying.
Great. I'm so glad you do, because this is going to take a huge bipartisan effort. You know, no matter who's in the majority, we have to deal with this issue. Anyway, I would just like to ask, first of all, I have a question for the OLA office, and that is, I know you took these samples of 100 cases. I missed the very beginning, but I'd like to know why you picked 100. Is that a statistically valid number? Because I don't know what the universe is, but 100 seems like a very, very small sample. I'm kind of looking for, you know, how valid are the conclusions you've drawn given the sample size. Can you just do that first?
Representative Liebling, would you like Mr. Burke to give us that number? I calculated it on mine,
yes.
But I would not like to see it until it's verified.
Please,
him.
Mr. Burke, I'd love that.
Mr.
Thank
Chair,
you.
Representatives, I believe the figure you're looking at is in that same table in the second column. You'll see the total administrative expenses are $214.7 million. And if you read the sub-note on it, that's excluding the taxes and surcharges, as you noted in your percentage, including taxes and surcharges. That figure would be $278 million, which I believe Ms. Baumbach referred to in one of her slides. Mm-hmm. I think that's the number you're looking for.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Berg. And
I had a higher number.
Yeah, well, we'll have to calculate that ourselves, Mr. Chair, I think, just to be sure.
Let me do that in my head.
Sure, yes, please do it. Please do it.
$336 million. Ms. Bombach, would you like to answer Representative Liebling's question?
Mr. Chair, Representative, sure. I'll talk a little bit about the methodology that we use. So there's sort of two ways that you can take that number and view it, and that is were we looking to do statistical projections of some of our findings? And as part of a compliance audit, what we elected to do, because we were at such a granular level, we developed our method based in part on what were the questions coming to us, what did legislators really want to know, and in doing that, it really does put us way down in the weeds. So with respect to the sample size, there's two ways that you could do it for a compliance audit. You could draw a larger sample and do statistical projections, or you could pull the sample of about the size that we did. We did a combination of random and purposive sampling, again, to get down at the granular cell level. And then we could look for likely related costs from that. And in that, we wanted to know a little bit more if we had pulled a sample in a particular type of expense category, taking into consideration all of the managed care organizations' variation in their accounting practices. Okay, so there's great variation in how they do that and trying to account for that. We chose to use the approach where we would look for likely related costs to any exception that we might find. And you'll see in the report some of the exceptions, even though the transaction we tested was fairly small, some of the likely related costs were as much as $200,000. And so we took that approach instead, trying to really understand what is the impact of the finding that we're looking at. And in defense of that approach, we felt that if we're trying to understand policy deficiencies in law, deficiencies in guidelines, or accounting principles, and if we are at the cell level, that's probably a better approach that would tell us if we saw across all managed care organizations one particular problem area, it could be that there's just a huge lack of guidance or gap in the instructions. And in our view, it's not necessarily appropriate to extrapolate that to all of the managed care organizations reporting. So we really were trying to dig down into how they're doing their reporting, what are some of the implications and the reasons for why they are doing the reporting that they're doing. Again, I'll emphasize that in drawing the sample, we used for our population expenses that were $500 or greater. I think that the managed care organizations, this is something that they're not used to. I think typically for a financial audit, that involves looking at transactions over $10,000. And we felt that in doing that, it moves an awful lot of transactions out of the population to be testing. So we did test approximately 100 transactions at each of the entities. And then we walked those transactions through three key financial reports. We walked it through their allocation models. We tested whether they were in compliance with contracting principles, if that was required. And then we tested whether or not we thought that those were allowable expenses for rate-setting purposes. And then we tested whether or not those were actually disclosed to the Department of Human Services. So we kind of took that long game approach on each one of those transactions.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you for that. So this kind of really does lead into the question and kind of the point I want to make and the question I want to ask the Commissioner. So I think what we see here is we see that the state, including you, the auditor's office, we absolutely struggle to stay on top of this stuff because we have these enormous organizations that we contract with, the HMOs, who have I don't know how much staff working on this. And if there's any little hole or wiggle room in legislation, or if DHS leaves them any little hole or wiggle room, they are going to find it. And they are going to be steps ahead of us, I think, no matter what we do in finding ways to, you know. And going back to my point about the administrative expenses here, those expenses are only reported administrative expenses of the HMOs. It doesn't even count what it costs the state to even try to keep up with them and do this and set the rates. And it doesn't account for what the providers have to do to deal with billing from all these different entities for what really are just the same pool of public patients. So there is just an enormous amount of waste going on here. What I want to ask you, Commissioner Jessen, is to comment on what the comparison is in staff power. Am I correct that you're kind of, as big a department as DHS is, that you're kind of overmatched here? Or am I completely wrong about that? So if we just tighten up some of the law and so on, is that going to fix the problem from your point of view? Or do you need to kind of have the legions of people to match the legions of lawyers and other people that the HMOs have?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, you're certainly correct. We don't have the legions of people. But I think one of the... when you look at these recommendations, to me, what's really important is it's not just about clarifying what we want, redefining that guidance, you know, or what exactly how we're defining things. If we don't do that together with more enforcement, we're not going to make the progress we need to make. And that's why I think that the auditor's recommendations, and as I said earlier, we have started down that process the last year and a half of doing a lot more refinement about what, you know, administrative expenses and what we're looking for and what we're expecting. But I think with the OLA's recommendation that we also need to have, independent audits, have audits to go out and do the double checks. And it's really both of those things that I think are important. And I also think that one thing we can take away from just what Mr. Noble said at the beginning of this, where he talked about contracting with an outside vendor to do that, but then finding that that outside vendor had conflicts as well. You know, that is one of the reasons that I feel that this is something we have, even though we don't have as much staff as they do, we have to do this internally, because if you think of the health plans, it is really hard to find those qualified, you know, independent auditors who don't have conflicts one way or the other. And I think that's to me, is one of the takeaways, is that it's not just about better processes and better guidance. It's about doing those audits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your indulgence.
Absolutely. We definitely have a BMF on our hands here, and it's a lot to get around. We will take the next week to look through the audit more thoroughly.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just add one comment to that, because I think it's really an important point for you to think through going forward, and that is where should you get this extra oversight? And, you know, you made one decision back a couple of years ago to use the Office of the Legislative Auditor to go out and hire a CPA firm. And we interact with CPA firms all the time. We have not done some work in auditing financial statements in various entities and turned that over to CPA firms. And so what I'm about to say is not in any way intended to disparage them at all as enterprises. But the independence issue, I think, is really, really important. But also, I must say that we found a lot of things with our audit team that the CPA firms going into those MCOs before us didn't call out as issues. So I really do think that we would favor you building up the resources in the department to have very specialized expertise that can go in and do this work. I just want to comment on one other thing about the cost effectiveness of going outside and hiring a firm. The legislature appropriated $1.7 million for us just to do this assignment. I thought that was not an effective use of public resources. And so we used our own appropriation. We used about $100,000 to hire an actuarial firm to help us with this. But we are prepared to give you back $1,600,000 of what you appropriated under the recommendation that you either return that money to the Health Care Access Fund and use it for some other purpose, allocate maybe some of that money to DHS. But we don't think the approach of giving us $1.7 million to go out and hire a CPA firm that then turned out to not be independent to do the work was the best approach. So I think that needs to be on the table. There is a law still in effect that would have us continue to hire a CPA firm and spend that amount of money going forward to have possibly some other CPA firm go out and do this work that we found the firm not independent to do the first effort. So I think that's something that really needs to be on the table. More oversight, more accountability, where and by whom?
Mr. Nobles, you actually hit the nail on the head. You know, for 4 years, and many that served here longer than I have witnessed, that's how we do business around here. We're going to allocate, here's $200 million to do the job with a certain trust. And prime example, we authorize a bill that gives $1.7 million for you to do a job, not knowing really what it cost. Here's your money, do the job, and come back to us in a year later. And who's paying attention? Except for those detailed in that each agency department. And I see it as a systemic problem, not only in your department, and all the agencies, all the bills that we just throw money on, and hopefully that it'll stick and make a difference. And most of it does.
But Mr. Chairman, but some of it doesn't. I just want to reiterate, we're giving you the money back.
That's awesome. Yes, can you repeat that again, Mr. Nomals?
We're giving you the money back.
That's awesome. Thank you. Wonderful. Very responsible. Okay, I'm sorry, I just... you know, was thinking of that and wanted to spout off on my soapbox here. Okay, we get back to business. We have Representative Purcells has a question, followed by Representative Grunhagen, Lane, and then Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to a little bit of what I was heard. I was trying to get in when Representative Liebling was asking some questions, and to a point that Representative Liebling brought up to the and. Your name here, sorry about that. Ms. Bamba, we're talking about sample size, and I'm trying to get my head around what statistical relevance I should place upon these audit results when I see 2 to 4 exceptions per HM or per MCO, etc. And as a science guy, then okay, what's the meaning of that? Because I think we have a non-parametric population here as opposed to parametric, so this is where I'm coming from. So what's the population that we're dealing with? When you say we got a sample size of 100, I heard that. Is that about right?
Correct.
What's the population?
Well, the population varies for each of the managed care organizations. They really do have some different... they each have different accounting practices, and so it can vary by, again, we come back to how they allocate their costs. So, you know, it can vary by tens and tens of thousands. And so to the extent that we were trying to accommodate, you know, the 200,000 records versus the 20,000 records, and then, again, getting back to how... their accounting practices, maybe I can explain a little bit better. Sometimes they prepay an expense, and then they would use a practice where they might make incremental payments based on that, and in other instances, we did not see that so often. So it was a bit challenging to control for those differences, and that's why we don't do statistical projections here. We think that to do that would probably take a year of cleaning the data, and we did not have time to do that. I will note that when the Office of Inspector General goes out and they do their audits for Medicare, they have a very standardized sample size that they use. Frequently, depending, they will look at any transaction over $5, and they will pull a sample size of 300. And we looked at samples, transactions over 500, and we pulled a sample of 100. So I appreciate the concern about whether or not there's any statistical meaning here. We recognized the deficiencies in what we were doing. Some of it had to do with we're a bit short on resources, and as you can imagine, the work related to that, pulling a sample of 200 or 300 would be require, again, significantly more resources than we had. So sometimes during our audits, I'll say that for a population over 250, we might pull 65 samples. And that is when we're auditing state agencies. So Trust me, I appreciate the your queries and concerns about the statistical validity of it.
And
Representative,
Mr. Chair, and Ms. Baumbach, and I don't question the validity of your findings. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to. When I looked at that, and I looked at the 2 to 4 exceptions, and I heard you say 100% was that something? Oh, 2 to 4%. Nah, that's probably not right because we aren't dealing with parametrics here. So I'm right in believing this is not going to be 2 to 4% of issues, if you will, with each MCO. It likely is a bigger number than that. Maybe a bigger number than that.
Bigger or smaller.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Purcells. Anything else? Okay, Representative Grunhagen.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, after over 4 years of being here, as far as my recollection, I think you're the first agency head that ever said they want to give us money back. So we should at least give you a plaque or something.
Cost too much.
Yeah.
It's only 5.6%, Representative, of $6 billion. Was that your question, Representative Grunhagen?
No, that was just an observation. Yeah, my question is, or a kind of a comment question, is, you know, I spent a lot of my first 2 years on this subject and didn't get too far. But, and, you know, part of the bone of contention was the administrative costs versus what providers actually receive in payments, because obviously they... According to the providers, they're losing money on every deal and making it up in volume. You know, they treat these patients, but they actually lose money on doing it. So obviously, there's a big concern about the administrative cost, and you know, millions of dollars are obviously a lot of money. And I agree with some of the previous comments made at the committee. But you know, as a layperson, when I look at this, I need comparative and historical. Obviously, there's other states that administer these plans similar to we do across the country. Some of them probably don't, some of them probably do. You know, when you have comparative data as far as what their administrative cost is, it helps a layperson like ourselves look at the data and come to a conclusion whether it's higher, low, you know, excessive, or about right, or not excessive. And, you know, when I first glance, you look at this, you think, well, there's millions of dollars here. But how does that compare to other states and how they are doing? Is that information readily available? I can't believe it's not, with the federal government somewhere or some private organization that does a study that could give us comparative and historical data as far as this administrative costs are concerned?
Mr. Nobles. Was that for you, Mr. Nobles, or Mr. Grunhagen? Or
whoever thought they could answer it.
Mr. Chair, Representative,
Mrs. Baumbach.
I appreciate your interest, and I think it's an important one. I believe that back in 2008 when we had looked at this issue, the biggest concern about making those comparisons is it's the richness of the benefits that are being offered and you know, how the administrative structure is set up. So it gets a bit challenging to make that comparison. It's not that it can't be done, and I do believe that there is research that has tried to control for those differences. So, you know, that's something that we can look into for you.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, if you've got anything like that, I would sure appreciate seeing it. I just can't believe that some comparative data isn't out there. And, you know, the other thing, I think... I can't remember when we went from the DHS administering these programs to the nonprofits, but I think the idea was they could do it more cost effectively as far as administration, and they would actually have tighter control of the payments to the providers. And I think that was done in the 90s, if I remember right. Maybe it was earlier. But there was a reason why states went to this model. They thought it would be in a more efficient way. Now, I don't know if that's ever been looked at, comparing when government... I'm sure there's some states that allow government to administer this yet, and other states that have gone to a similar model. But do you recall, it's not part of your audit, but do you believe, this is what I really wanted to ask, is do you believe that the administrative costs are excessive in relationship to the payments to the providers? And I ask you that question in spite of your comment here on page 1 or 2. It says, we also did not audit the responses and we express no opinion on them. But, you know, you must have an idea if you believe that the overall administrative expenses are excessive in relationship to the amount of benefits that are paid out or administered on these, looks like 6.6 million members in 2012.
Mr. Chair, Representative,
Ms. Bombeck.
We do have a section in the report when we are talking about question costs, and we did question for each of the managed care organizations. These are items that have been deemed unallowable in state law, and the amount of those types of expenses ranged from within our samples, somewhere between, it might have been $500,000 and $8 million. So to that extent, because they actually do fall under that definition in law as unallowable for rate setting purposes, I think you could conclude that if those were incorporated into the payment rates, it's probably excessive.
Mr. Chairman, could I also go back to the question about comparison data? I know that's something that we all always want. Legislators want it. We want it across a lot of different programs and activities. One of the real challenges is whether or not people are applying a consistent, uniform set of definitions, because what we see even here within the state of Minnesota among the MCOs, there can be some variation in interpretation. That's why we're asking for some greater specificity and clarity. If you start then trying to take Minnesota, compare it to Wisconsin or Tennessee, you know, you'd really need a lot of detail on exactly what is their definition. What bucket do they put this particular expense in? In some states, they may say that's a medical expense. Somewhere else, they may say that's an administrative expense. But, you know, I think you can try to get to some rough comparative data. But I would just, as I'm sure you would too, always want to be cautious about whether or not we really have an accurate, valid comparison.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, and just a follow-up on that. It's just that, let's say a state was administering very similar population, and they were only spending $150 million. Again, maybe they were putting things in different buckets, but what it does, it makes you look at that state and drill down a little bit to see why it's only $150 million. And on the other hand, if a state was doing a similar population and it was costing them $350 million, you might want to know why there was those additional costs. So it's just a red flag. And when I was on the school board, we used to have comparative data with other districts across the state and also in relationship to our size. And what it gave us as school board members is areas that needed to be looked into closer that were out of line based on the averages, and where we were doing well and where we were doing not so well. In a lot of cases, it led to savings and efficiencies because we were able to spot those areas of excessive expense compared to other districts that were operating very similar to ours.
Mr. Noble.
Chairman, just again, I couldn't agree more with Representative Gruenhagen. He understands the red flags that you need to pursue and find out, is it just an artifact of a different definition, or is there something real there that we need to pursue? So I think, you know, usually when you work on a school board, you sort of figure out down in the details of how to do it.
I just want to remind Representative Gruenhagen that this is the Health Care Committee, not the K-12 Committee, Education Committee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen.
Ms. Bombeck.
I want to further address your question and talk a little bit about some work that we did try to do as part of this. And what we wanted to do was try to understand how other states, we selected a sample of states, try to understand how and what methods they used for computing and analyzing their administrative costs relative to their medical expenses. And as much as we face the same issues here, the data we were told is classified as not public. They were willing to share 3- and 4-year-old data. They didn't want to talk about what they were doing currently. So we did send out a query to a number of other states, and I think maybe one state was willing to give us a little bit of something for 2 years earlier.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I just want to make a comment regarding doing it in-house as the OLA is, or doing it for a company, a not-for-profit company outstate. We always say, you know, we got to go, perhaps some representatives might say that we have to go out to a for-profit because we're going to get better efficiency, we're going to get more accuracy than we can get in government. But here's a perfect example of our own in-house accountant doing the job much cheaper than we could do for a for-profit, and makes me realize that I just had new windows put in my house, and I found out that the cost of all the windows themselves and all the subcontractors that were involved was one half of the price I actually paid. So there was a lot that went to this company for profit. So we do save by doing it in-house. This is an important point. We do save by doing it in-house. And I appreciate what the OLA does here. However, the job's not done because we gave that money for a much larger audit than the administrative costs. The job is not done at all. And I would we could make some comments on that because I think you intend to do more.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, the job is never going to be done. I mean, I go back to what Representative Liebling said. You know, every year, every biennium, we spend a lot of money, and we spend a lot of it on administrative costs, but also on medical costs as well. So the oversight and accountability, whether it's done by OLA, whether it's done by DHS, however it's done, the job is never done. I mean, this is something that really requires due diligence continuously. We do have to decide, I think, during this legislative session on the law that I referenced, whether it's going to stay in place or whether you want to modify that. But, yes, I mean, there is a law still on the books that says the Office of Legislative Auditor will contract with an outside firm to do an audit work that would go beyond what we did. You're absolutely correct. But I do think that this is an opportunity to step back from that and ask, is that really the most cost-effective way to do it, or do we want to shift to a different approach?
So I'm understanding a shift to a different approach. Are you speaking of turning DSFs doing it in-house on a ongoing basis, or what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, that would be one approach. There are a variety of options. I mean, one of them that I sort of shudder to put forth to you is that we could keep doing the work ourselves in-house. We have a group of people who are now pretty experienced at it. But in all honesty, I if you want us to keep doing it, we'll do it. We'll either do it with our own staff, or if you think there's value in going and getting a firm, we'll try to find a firm that is both competent and independent. So that's really your choice to make. I think it's a decision that needs to be made this session. Again, you do have people down at the Department of Human Services that are very frequently, I mean, they sit there virtually every day thinking about working on rate setting and overseeing the managed care organizations. So I think some degree of reliance and, frankly, confidence and expectation that they will do it and do it well is what is in order.
Representative Lane.
Mr. Chair, that brings me to something that was said very early on, that there were things that HMOs did not allow you to go into, the considered proprietary or data practices. I always wonder why would they claim that something was proprietary in how they spent their money if it never got to their competitor, it came to the rate setter. And and as I understand it, I believe DHS has the ability to say to them, no, you cannot claim proprietary for this, you must give it to us. Between and perhaps and the OLA, you were stopped at that level. So is that true? Can you get past that, both DHS and OLA?
Ms. Bomba.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually, the managed care organizations did provide us the data that we asked for. They did comply with that respect. They just, under the authority of our office, we are obligated to treat the data the same way that the data source considers the data. And so as the data came to us, they did flag it as trade secret and proprietary. At this point, we are continuing to treat it as such. So it isn't that we weren't able to get it. They did give us the detailed data that we asked for.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lane, the same would hold true for DHS as well. So we do request that data. We work with a lot of information from the MCOs that is considered trade secret. We use it for rate-setting purposes. It would be more in a public disclosure question that we would withhold that, but we certainly can use that information for rate setting.
Okay, then one last question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lane.
Lost my train of thought. Okay, you're going to take the trade secrets. What we call the warehouse of data, there's some sense that there's all kinds of data given to DHS that is so much that it's impossible, actually. It's like somebody saying, well, give me all the information, such and such, and you get 1,000 boxes of information, and now you're going to spend the rest of your life going through it trying to find what you want. I have this feeling, I don't know if it's true, that there's an awful lot of information coming to DHS that is almost unreadable in that sense because it's so vast. Is this true or not?
Mr. Brock.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lane, certainly if you were to request information from DHS, we would certainly sort through for you the information that we can provide. We certainly would. If you're looking for administrative detail as it's laid out both in statute in terms of what we collect, we certainly can make that available and also help step through.
I think she's getting the idea of what I'm thinking about. It's more about you people being able to sort through it.
Commissioner Jessen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, maybe I could answer kind of a high-level question than Mr. Morocco, because I think I understand where you're going. We do get a lot of information from the MCOs, and especially after kind of now that we have these kind of quarterly, we get information quarterly from them. We get a lot more information after the legislature, passed a law, which we very much supported and worked with you all on in 2013, I believe it was. I believe that a lot of that information is even listed in the OLA's report. So we get a lot more of this information, and we are doing a great deal more with it today than has been done in the past. It's kind of making sure that we don't have just the data, but we have the data analytic tools to be able to use that. And for an example, and this is a little outside of kind of the realm of just the MCOs, but in our work with those IHPs, integrated health partnerships, where we're like contracting with providers and being able to kind of share information with them on what's happening with the clients that they're serving, we're using a lot of that data to be able, it's in a much more serviceable manner, but certainly there's a lot of work to go. Nathan, do you want to add anything to
well,
that?
I would say that's precisely, I think, what the auditor has pointed out. I think where we would have challenges is precisely where the audit has pointed to, where there might be inconsistencies in terms of how things are reported or how they're categorized. So certainly to the extent that that there's clarity in law or clarity through our administrative practice of as part of the rate setting, again, where we have the clarity, then we now have the resources to use it, and where we don't have the clarity, we would be looking for help from the MCOs to provide that, or to the extent that we need legislative authority to do so, we would ask.
And just a side comment, Mr. Chair, if we could have at some point other people come from the audience to ask questions or make comments.
Representative Lane, we have 15 minutes left. We have got several questions left. We did not have the public testimony scheduled for this time. We'll see how we're doing. Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I've been kind of working on that number, multiplying that number out, and there's a little discrepancy on what the number is for the administrative expenses, because when I apply that 5.6% to the overall number of what we're spending for MCOs. So what you have in this chart is just the four MCOs.
Correct.
So that would be a discrepancy, but the number I'm getting for 2 years is $336 point something million, and that is lower than what you would have in your chart if you double your one-year number. So I don't understand why that discrepancy would be there. So just giving that to you to work on, you know, we can talk about it offline, but I first wanted to just point that out. The question I wanted to ask, though, Mr. Chair, is that, you know, as I understand it, the OLA was also directed to audit the medical expenses of the plan, so, you know, what we're spending on medical care. And I don't know if I missed that in the beginning, if Mr. Nobles mentioned it, but I think there's a lot of interest in the room in understanding if you're going to do that piece of it or exactly what we're doing. And then I did also get a comment from someone, which I think is kind of, I kind of do agree, which is that, you know, allocating $1 million, or was it $1.7 million, to do an outside audit of something of this magnitude that involves so much public money, I don't think that's unreasonable. And it's great if you can give it back, Mr. Nobles. I would tell you, if you're going to really do this for us, I'd say keep the money and use it to do this work, because I think this is something that, you know, as a steward of public money, I would say we absolutely need to put forward the resources to be able to do this kind of auditing and keep people on track. But anyway, I would like to know about
that,
the medical audit.
Couple of points, Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling. You're absolutely right. I mean, we were mandated to do more than we did, but that we didn't do the other work because of our experience with the firm that we hired. I mean, we took a lot of time. We took, as I recall, about 6 months or so to really try to plan out and then establish an RFP and then go through a solicitation and reviewing proposals, interviews, and then signing a contract and starting the audit. We were doing the audit with the firm when we discovered this undisclosed independence impairment. So we lost a lot of time, and it was our decision not to go back through an RFP and a solicitation process, because we were really losing a lot of time and resources at that point. So again, as I said, we decided to take the other mandate that we had to look at administrative expenses and do that work, and then see where the legislature wants to go forward with the original legislation for us to hire a CPA firm, go back and possibly do more work into the medical expenses. Actually, you make a good point, though, Representative Liebling, about the 1.7. It's a lot of money, but what our experience told us is that to really do outside auditing of all of these MCOs, given the complexity, given the amount of money and transactions that are involved, that might not be enough. So I think, again, it's time to sort of pause and say, where do we want that work to be done? Where can we get the best value for the money? Should we be able to build up a staff of expert auditors at DHS who are doing this every day? Do we have, I mean, I'll just say, frankly, I think one of the reasons the legislation was passed and we were asked to hire an outside firm is that there are a number of people who simply do not trust any government agency, whether it's DHS or OLA or any other government agency, to do adequate, competent auditing of the MCOs. I think that's a mistaken view, but it is a view that's out there, and it's the reason I think the legislation was crafted the way it was. Again, I think it's time to rethink that and say, how much do we want to put into the oversight? I agree with you, Representative Liebling. This is one heck of a lot of money, and it deserves a lot of accountability. And to get that, you've got to be able to dig deep into what's going on. But I don't know, frankly, that I would necessarily recommend that appropriating that money and hiring a firm to do it on an ad hoc basis is necessarily the most cost-effective way to do it. That's what you need to think through.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, could you just explain, though, where we are with the audit of the medical expenses, because there's a lot of people in the room are really interested in knowing that. And were we not able to go forward because of this issue with the outside auditor? Are you planning to go forward with that? Do you need more tools to go forward? Where are we with that piece?
We did not do that piece of it, in large part because of the problem we had, the time we lost dealing with the CPA firm. It will be your choice. I mean, if you leave the law on the books as is, that's what we will do. We will go back out, try to hire another firm, and look more broadly at the accounting practices, medical expenses, administrative expenses of the MCOs. But, again, just to repeat myself, I would hope that we will take some time to rethink whether that is the most cost-effective way to do it. That's my message to you, and I'd be happy to work with you and other members. You may decide that, yes, that's the way you want to do it, that you want us to go out and hire a firm. You don't want DHS to do it. You don't want OLA staff to do it. That's a view that prevails among some people. It's not one that I hold.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just finish up here, I just would say that, Mr. Nobles, I want that rest of that audit done yesterday. Okay, I still want it done however it gets done. But just to tell the members, you know, I do have a bill that was put in this year that would move us away from this PMAP system. And I still think that's the way to go. You know, we can get more. We've got a complicated system already. We make it so much more complicated by farming it out to different entities, having them compete with each other, having them have all administrative expenses, having DHS try to manage this multi-headed beast, having to audit the multi-headed beast, and you hear all the complication we've been hearing today. And my personal view, and I think the view of many people in this state, is that it's time to go to a completely different model. Barring that, I certainly think we have to audit on an ongoing basis, but that just seems like a drop in the bucket. I think that we've had enough time, enough money going into this sinkhole, and it's time to do a different model. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Is there anyone from the plans? I apologize for being away. I had a bill downstairs, and I don't think that the plans responded, but is there anyone from the plans that would like to come down and respond? Just want to give that opportunity. Okay. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nobles, just recognizing I have a rudimentary understanding of the audit yet at this point, but just based upon some of the numbers that I've been putting together, and certainly feel free to correct me when I make a mistake, but looking at your report on the summary, the second page, just gauging the numbers of the services of the 620,000 individuals for 2012, so taking that number and then comparing it to page 7, which was based upon Representative Liebling's numbers of the number, the amount spent, the $3 billion and or $6.4 billion over the 2 years, what would that number be then per individual of the 620,000? I have a calculation here, but I don't want to say it publicly until it's accurate.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nobles,
Representative McDonald, you have the advantage of me because I don't have my calculator.
I did that in my head. What do you mean?
Oh, no. So if you would share the number with us, we'll...
All right. Well, like Representative Liebling, I came up with that $336 million of the 6.4. So I validate that with you, Representative Liebling. But the number I had, and again, I went to Watertown, so my math wasn't my strong suit, but I have about, no offense to Watertown, of course, if anyone's listening. Mr. Alvig was a great teacher, and Mr. Landick and all of them. About $9,677,000.
Mr. Chair, we're going to go back and get out our calculators and get this sorted out and give you the number.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I just wanted to clarify that the number that we're reporting here does not include expenses for the county-based purchasing plan, and the totals that are in here regarding member months and total members served is based on data that the Department of Human Services reports. So the numbers should align for 2012. I understand that there may be some discrepancies. The 278 are the expenses as reported by the managed care organizations. But again, it's just for the poor. That's about 84% of all administrative spending. you know, if you're not counting the county-based purchasing plans in one other smaller managed care organization.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
So as we members take this report home and over watching America's Next Talent or Top Model or whatever program we watch, and we do the numbers, would it be accurate to say that we take the number of services, the number of individuals, and divide that by the number of monies that we spent on the MCOs? Would that be a accurate statement? To come up with kind of a number of how much per person are we spending in this based upon the information that you've given us?
Representative, Mr. Chair, I think the way that we've divided it out is per member month. I understand what you're interested in is per individual. And so we don't, I think on page 8 we describe what the costs are per member month. Obviously, I think the number would be different if you're looking at per individual, regardless of how often they are or for how many months in any given year they might be on the program.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, I saw that number. Is that what, $34 per member per month?
Well, now that's for just the PMAP and Minnesota Care. I believe it's mm-hmm. about $400. It's much more for the seniors, and it would be even greater. Let me take that back. I think we've got some different numbers in Chapter 3. So the cost per member month are going to be different depending on the program, if it's special needs basic care. And that data is on page 32 where we make the distinction between Minnesota PMAP and MSHO and MSC Plus. So excuse me, the distinction is $34 per member month versus $142, and we don't talk about member months for the special needs basic care population.
Representative McDonald.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. So Commissioner Jessen, would that be a fair assignment maybe, or Mr. Nobles, for us to take that home and digest the numbers, dissect them, divide them, and find out what we're spending per person of that 620,000 population for that year anyway? And, you know, as Representative Grunhagen always says, comparative data. And if we can get our numbers around, gee, how much are we spending per person just to administer the programs? Would that be a thing that would be helpful, do you think, to us legislators going forward?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, I think this is one of those places where you need to be cautious about averages, though. And you would also want to look at variation because, as I think has been mentioned, you know, different populations have different needs, different levels of expense, and probably, therefore, have different levels of administrative costs related to that. So we have a wide distribution of people being covered here, some who may go throughout the year with very little delivery of medical services, others who may receive medical services, if not daily, weekly. So, you know, I think I would be cautious about what you get out of an average, particularly across such wide diversity. You might want to look within a particular smaller population or program to see what that number is.
Ms. Baumbach.
Representative McBennett, is that something that we could do? If you were looking for that data, we can certainly put that together for you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Commissioner Jessen.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, we're happy to meet with you and help frame up the information as you would like to see it. But I do think if you dive into the chart that's in the report on page 32, there are a lot of acronyms here. But what it does really is try and give you some of those per member per month breakout of administrative costs versus medical costs by program. And we can further break this down because, as Mr. Noble suggests, you know, a family that's on kind of being served by what they call our PMAP program, you know, doesn't have on average nearly the medical needs someone in our special needs program, which serves people with disabilities, or the acronym for like MSHO or MSC Plus, but which is like seniors who have a lot of complex needs. So I think if we kind of started there and kind of gave some explanation and broke that down more, perhaps that could to get at what you're looking for.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, members, and thanks to the legislative auditor for all your hard work on this issue. And moving ahead, we will be having some bills moving forward, so there will be very likely bills moving forward the committee and also the Health Policy Committee, and folks who wish to weigh in on those will be available for the committees at that time. We will be moving forward with that, members. We are adjourned.